From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Whatever you think of the Clinton Foundation, you can't ignore it. It's so big, so rich, its donor list is so powerful, and its namesakes include a former president and potential future president of the United States. How was it built? That now matters to Hillary Clinton's bid for the White House. This hour on Point, the building of the Clinton Foundation. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are we paying enough attention to the Clinton Foundation? Too much attention? What matters here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're going to hear a lot in this hour. The Clinton Foundation is a big deal. It's becoming a big political deal. Here was Hillary Clinton talking about it last month at a bicycle shop in Iowa.
I am so proud of the foundation. I'm proud of the work that it has done and that it is doing. It attracted donations from people, organizations from around the world. And I think that just goes to show that people are very supportive of the life-saving and life-changing work it's done here at home and elsewhere. And I'll let the American people make their own judgments.
And here's the guy who got it started, former President of the United States, Bill Clinton, talking with NBC News' Cynthia McFadden.
I don't think there's anything sinister in trying to get wealthy people and countries that are seriously involved in development to spend their money wisely in a way that helps poor people and lifts them up. I don't think there's anything bad with that. I think it's good.
I think it's good, and many supporters agree with him, but it's quite a story, and certainly not everybody does. With us now from Washington are two Washington Post reporters who have written multiple articles on the Clinton Foundation together and with other Post reporters. Their most recent collaboration is a huge story, ran this week, headlined The Inside Story of How the Clintons Built a $2 Billion Global Empire. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.com. Tom Hamburger, one of its authors, is a money and politics reporter for The Washington Post. Hello, Tom. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Tom.
And reporting that piece, along with Tom and David Fahrenthold, Rosalind Helderman is with us, political and enterprise investigations reporter for The Post. Her most recent report, published last night on WashingtonPost.com, is As FIFA Allegations Swirled, Clintons Gave Qatar a Stage and Legitimacy. Rosalind, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
This big piece that ran on June 2nd, put out on June 2nd, quite a tale, lots of detail in here, and it starts off with this amazing anecdote where we're high over, I don't know what, the Atlantic or somewhere, in a private Saudi jet, and on the plane are Chevy Chase, the former president of Brazil, the founders of Google, John Cusack, a former president of Mexico, and Bill Clinton. Just for starters, what was the pivotal moment that unfolded up there in the sky, Tom?
Tom, that unlikely group were winging their way to Davos, the annual schmooze fest in Switzerland, which brings corporate executives and leading politicians together to talk about the world's problems. Bill Clinton had invited the eclectic group to travel with him first to Saudi Arabia, hoping they would soothe relations after 9/11. But they were flying to Davos, and on board the plane, there began to be a discussion. Why not Davos instead of just a schmooze fest? Why not make it a little more purposeful? And a young aide to Bill Clinton at the time started looking around at that crowd and thinking, no one can bring things together like the former president. And it was the beginning of an era of great international expansion, especially in visibility for the Clinton Foundation.
This was back in, was it 2002, Tom?
It was January of 2004.
Flying over and thinking maybe there's more that can be done here. The Clinton Foundation, Rosalind, was already around. It had been started really just to sort of put funding together for the Clinton Library in Arkansas, right?
That's right. And part of the tale that we tell here is sort of how it began as this really quite small organization based in Arkansas, fundraising like crazy to build what would be a library and a government graduate program in Little Rock, and how Bill Clinton, sort of one brainstorm at a time, comes up with other ideas for things they should be doing in the world.
Talk to us about that evolution. I mean, you end up
with what is now called the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, with what you describe as the audacious goal of solving some of the world's most vexing problems by bringing together the wealthiest, glitziest, and most powerful people from every part of the planet. Tom, Rosalind, take us through some of the stations of evolution that went from supporting a library to imagining a kind of bigger than Davos or, you know, Clinton version of Davos to what we see today. Take us through some of those steps.
Tom, we interviewed for this story some of the close aides to Bill Clinton who were with him in the White House in 1997 when the Clinton Foundation was first formed. And like every former president in the recent past, their first discussion was about a library. Bill Clinton knew from the beginning he wanted it to be something more than that, but he wasn't sure exactly what. Jimmy Carter provided something of a role model for a former president. Mm-hmm. And Bill Clinton was thinking, do some good, not just a monument to the past, but it wasn't fully thought through at all. The first task really was to raise money for building that library complex, which included a graduate school of public service in Little Rock. And so Clinton and his staff were very focused in the early years on fundraising for the library complex.
So that's the start. Now, you know, all these years later, as you write, we have 11 major initiatives with the Clinton Foundation focusing on crop yields in Africa, earthquake relief in Haiti, the cost of AIDS drugs worldwide, a lot of other things. Constellation of Charities has raised more than $2 billion, employs more than 2,000 people, has a combined annual budget of more than $223 million. Walk us on through that, Rosalind. You've got the library, you've got funding for that, but the ambitions get bigger. There's a time here where you describe Bill Clinton kind of, he's in his mid-50s. He's been president of the United States already for two terms. He's sitting around at the new house in Chappaqua in New York watching TiVo and wants to do more. How does this bigger vision begin to unfold?
Sure. So one of the things that's interesting is in this very sort of Clinton-esque fashion, the foundation grows sort of by random encounters in Bill Clinton's life. Basically, what happens is he sort of travels the world and he talks to people and they'll bring him a problem and sort of employing that sort of classic Bill Clinton curiosity, he talks to them and immediately turns to his staff and says, let's solve this problem, and that becomes a new program of the Clinton Foundation. So one of the very early encounters, for instance, is he visits with a woman who owns a card shop, a greeting card shop in Harlem, where he had just opened his post-presidential offices. And she tells him how she doesn't know how to sort of operate her business in the best way possible. And so the Clinton Foundation starts this very early program to provide sort of guidance and mentoring to small business owners. It starts in Harlem. It ends up being in nine cities around the U.S. In another instance, he knows he wants to do something international, but he doesn't know exactly what. He has a longtime friend and aide, Ira Magaziner. He had led the efforts to reform healthcare with Hillary Clinton in the White House. Ira comes to him and says, why don't we start a program to help bring new AIDS drugs to the developing world, make them more inexpensive. And so from that begins a massive, what is now the largest piece of the Clinton Foundation, a program to bring lower cost drugs to people around the world who need them.
Describe to us, Tom, how some of the really big chunks of money start to come in here. To get to $2 billion, yeah, that can be lots of a million here and a million there, but there are bigger chunks as well. How did the money mount up, Tom?
Well, it started initially in the very beginning. There was some $3 million that was left over from Clinton's second inaugural fund. That money became the basis for the foundation itself. One of the things that we learned in reporting this is that Bill Clinton was very hands-on and involved both in fundraising and in the minute details of building the library and the graduate school initially, but also reaching out to major donors who might join. Roz just mentioned this work distributing the anti-AIDS retrovirals around the world, which in some ways formed the biggest project that the Clintons had taken on. And you'll remember that when the AIDS crisis was raging, there were a number of philanthropies and major foundations that stepped forward saying this is an important task and offering to support it. One of the leaders in that was the Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates. And the Gates Foundation is one of the major donors over time to the Clinton Foundation. And one of the reasons that they donate is that they make a grant to the Clinton Foundation, and the staff of the Clinton Foundation implemented, in a sense, their plan to distribute AIDS drugs below market cost to needy people around the world.
That's just one of the billionaires in here. You've got Carlos Slim, the Mexican billionaire, Hunter, the Scottish billionaire. We've got all kinds of response online. I mean, you've got some people saying, same old Clintons, worse than I thought. But here's another listener who says, I went to the foundation's website to find the mission statement. We convene businesses, governments, NGOs, and individuals to improve global health and wellness, increase opportunity for women and girls, reduce childhood obesity, create economic opportunity and growth, and help communities address the effects of climate change, is the quote from the website. Our listener asks, Rosalind says, so how does that translate to bad? Anyone who in politics is involved in philanthropic work gets a gold star, anyone else, but Hillary gets a black eye. What gives? What about that response, Rosalind?
So a lot of the focus in recent weeks on the Clinton Foundation has been from the donor base. And one of the things that became apparent to us as we were working on this story is that it is built into the DNA of the foundation to accept money from the most powerful invested interests in the world. And that creates sort of questions of, yes, they're doing good. Yes, they're doing charity. But what else might they want from a former president, and especially from his wife, who was during all this time a senator, then secretary of state, then a candidate for the presidency?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the building of the Clinton Foundation, its money, its power, and what it means now for Hillary Clinton and her ambitions, presidential ambitions. Rosalind Helderman and Tom Hamburger are with us, two of the three reporters on a very big Washington Post story this week that lays out the origins and the growth of the Clinton Foundation. Headline, the inside story of how the Clintons built a $2 billion global empire. The Clintons and supporters say, what's the problem here? We're looking to do good. Bill Clinton, very straightforward about that. Hillary Clinton, the same. And yes, we've gone to people with money to put it to work. Critics say, well, what about conflicts of interest here? What do people want? However you look at it, it is already right in the middle of the 2016 campaign. Here, from last month, the Clinton Foundation posted a promotional video for the Clinton Global Initiatives. Here's Bill Clinton.
There will never be a time in human existence when we're totally free of problems. The real question is, when you have one, what do you do about it? And how do you do it?
Clinton Foundation, the answer for some. Republicans going right at this. Here's Scott Walker in New Hampshire.
I think it's part of an overall narrative where you see out of Hillary Clinton I think whether it's the emails, whether it's the issue about the Clinton Global Foundation or other things related to that, you see the Clintons think there's one set of rules for them and something different for the rest of us in America.
Rosalind, take us to some of the more interesting contributions here in your findings in this big report, whether it's Carlos Slim, the Mexican telecom billionaire, or Hunter, the Scottish mining guy, or beyond. What did you find most interesting as the money mounted?
You know, I think one of the things that's interesting is if you look at almost any powerful figure in the world, an enormous number of those people are donors to the Clinton Foundation. You know, they recently had a meeting in Morocco, and you start Googling the names of the sponsors of that meeting. It's the largest bank in Morocco. It's the richest man in Morocco. It's the oil conglomerate in Morocco. Those are the kinds of people who donate to the Clinton Foundation. And some of them have been charitable in other aspects of their lives, and some of them have not. And you could certainly say, well, good for the Clintons for urging these people who have not previously been charitable to step up to the plate. Or you could wonder whether they believe that they are giving for some additional reason beyond pure philanthropy to have time or the ear of Bill Clinton or potentially Hillary Clinton to curry favor with them, obviously very powerful people who might be in a position in some future time to potentially help them.
But the Clintons could say, Tom, well, look, there are a lot of philanthropic foundations with huge money in them. And that's what foundations do. I mean, think Rockefeller Foundation, talk about money, or Ford Foundation, or for that matter, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. All these have billions at their disposal.
That's exactly right. And I think one of the philanthropists are all they're often conflicting in different motivations for giving large sums of money or for starting a charity. The big difference in the case of the Clinton Foundation is that it is run by a former president and, as Roz just mentioned, most importantly, a former Secretary of State who could be the next president of the United States. So that the donations that are offered are not just donations to a philanthropy, but they can also be seen as attempting to curry favor with an influential couple and with a future president of the United States. That, I think, is the big difference, Tom.
Rosalind, did you find evidence of a clear conflict of interest or quid pro quo in your reporting for this story or the others that you've done?
So, look, I think many of the stories end up having kind of similar characteristics. What you can find is you can find people who have given money to the Clinton Foundation, and then you can find examples of instances in which Hillary Clinton as senator or Hillary Clinton State Department did things that appear to be beneficial to those donors. We have not found yet, no one else has found, to my knowledge, any clear links, absolute evidence that she did those things because those people were donors or they gave in order to get those particular benefits. But there has been quite a bit of reporting about instances in which there were contracts from the Clinton State Department to foundation donors. You know, it's certainly possible that the reason that is goes back to my point about it being the most powerful people in the world. The kind of government contractors who are going to get contracts from the State Department were also giving to the Clinton Foundation. But there certainly is a lot of room for continued reporting, and there's been a lot of reporting to this point.
What about the work itself, Tom? I know philanthropies are graded on how much of the resources that they raise they actually put toward the work. And what about the work? How does the Clinton Foundation score?
Well, it's interesting, Tom. One of the things that we ran into is that there is not a rigorous infrastructure to review foundations. There are a couple of reviews that the Clinton Foundation has received from a couple of organizations that rate and sort of watch foundations. One of them has given the Clinton Foundation a high grade in recent years, noting that they are spending their money pursuing the goals of the foundation. Another, which watches charities, has recently changed its previously high rating of the foundation and put the foundation on a watch list. The reason, they said, is press reports raising questions that have not been answered, and they felt the foundation has become too complicated to really review under their traditional rubric.
Charity Watch says that they spend 89% of what they raise on their programs, on their work. That's pretty good, I think, among philanthropies, and gave them an A rating. They could have had an A+, but they had an A.
Yes.
Doesn't sound so bad. Is it just controversy, or is it, again, is there evidence that's pulling that rating into the watch list?
It is actually the latter. That organization doesn't rate them because they file more than one tax return, and so that makes them too complicated for their rating system. This watch list they put together purely comes from if you've had any press accounts that a donor might want to read before giving money, they'll put you on that watch list.
You all are looking at a lot of these different people who are involved. Give us some examples here. I mean, you talk about one of these early meetings back in 05, big meeting, Bill Clinton time to go along with the UN General Assembly. A lot of people in town, so they had the Clinton Global Initiative, and it was turned into a sort of very glitzy Davos thing. Mick Jagger there, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, and Carlos Slim. This is the cell phone billionaire out of Mexico. What did he contribute, and is there any sign of a problem with the contribution?
The meeting that you're talking about, Tom, is the first meeting of the Clinton Global Initiative. And in some ways, this is so emblematic of Bill Clinton. Much of the work the Clinton Foundation had done to date was around some of the specific programs that we talked about, the work on AIDS, special programs to improve small business opportunities in Harlem. Now, suddenly, there was this great convening. The Clinton's staffers jokingly called it Davos with a soul, that was bringing together the wealthiest and the glitziest under one roof in a Sheraton hotel in New York with Bill Clinton as the convener. And at that first meeting, it set up an opportunity for corporations or individuals like a Carlos Slim or a Canadian mining magnate or individual companies from Dow Chemical to Starbucks to make public promises of good works they would do. It's mm-hmm. almost like a revival meeting, Tom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They would stand at the middle of this large hall next to Bill Clinton and say, our company, Starbucks, in one example, mm-hmm. Promises to do more for poor coffee farmers around the world, and will commit to spending certain millions of dollars within the next 2 years to accomplish that goal.
This sounds good. I mean, people with money saying they'll do big things. I mean, you write here that for Clinton, the foundation recreated many of the things he loved about the presidency: cheering crowds, an army of aides, and a resonant sense that he was doing good on a global scale. But if he's convener in chief and people are promising to do great things, what's the problem?
Well, there are Roz actually wrote about a problem of sorts, at least a potential embarrassment today. Roz, why don't you describe today's story?
Sure. So Tom was describing these commitments that are made at these annual Clinton Global Initiative meetings. I wrote this morning about one commitment that was publicly offered in 2013 from the committee hosting the World Cup in Qatar, the Gulf nation of Qatar. To make this commitment so publicly, the committee had to make a major donation to the Clinton Foundation, at least $250,000. But they actually were allowed to come to the stage with Bill Clinton during the closing ceremony of that year's event in 2013 and do it with Bill Clinton on the stage with them, which we understand that if you're going to do that generally, the donation is going to be larger than $250,000. And, you know, Bill Clinton sort of gave them this moment of international legitimacy while they talked about how they were going to use technology they were developing in soccer stadiums to cool greenhouses and feed the hungry. Well, it happened to be that at that very time, there were already huge allegations that the Qataris had engaged in bribery to get the World Cup. As you know, this is part of the right now ongoing FIFA scandal and investigation. People have been charged here in the United States with bribery, and there's a lot of allegations. At that time, FIFA actually had a committee that was investigating these allegations of bribery, and there were the Qataris on stage with Bill Clinton being praised for being charitable good actors in the world.
It gets gray. It gets gray in a hurry. Roxanne in Ovid, New York. Thanks for calling, Roxanne. You're on the air with Tom Hamburger and Roslyn Helderman.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I want to share an experience I had back in around 2003. My girlfriend had collected hundreds of tents from various sources to send them to India. And she couldn't get any airlines or anyone to help her. And through another friend of mine, she attended an event where Bill Clinton was present. And she got to speak to him. And within 5 minutes, she told him what she was trying to do. He took her name and number. And within 2 days, those tents were on their way to India. And what I want to say in addition to that is that until you have clear evidence on which to hang these people, I'm just so tired of this discussion, because the kinds of people that they associate with because of their power and influence, those people are always going to get the contracts and always get what they want. The fact that they are able to extract from these people large sums of money to actually do good in the world is an amazing feat in itself. And I think that until they have clear evidence on which to hang her, I just see all of this hoopla about the Clinton Foundation as just so much of an attempt to pull her down. And I can tell you, I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton. I'm for Bernie Sanders. So it's not because I'm a Hillary supporter, but I can recognize the good that this foundation has done.
Roxanne, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Tom and Roslyn, stand by. David Sirota joins us right now. He's a senior editor for investigations at the International Business Times. He's been writing about the Clinton Foundation. Roxanne, I don't know if you'll like his reporting or not, but let's look and see if that evidence may be there. His most recent piece is Hillary Clinton's State Department increased chemical arms sales to Middle East countries that gave to Clinton Foundation. David Sirota, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So give us your hardest, best connection if you've got one.
Well, we looked at whether there were conflicts at the State Department under Hillary Clinton in terms of taking money, both speaking fees and into the Clinton Foundation, from governments with business before the State Department. And our first story looked at weapons deals in general, and what we found is that the Clinton State Department authorized about $151 billion of Pentagon-brokered deals for 16 donors, governments that had donated to the foundation, $165 billion worth of direct commercial arms sales to 20 of those countries that donated. And as you mentioned, our most recent piece looked at chemical weapons. And what we found is that during the roughly 2 years of the Arab Spring protests that confronted a lot of Middle Eastern dictators, the Clinton State Department approved $66 million worth of toxicological agents, including chemical and biological agents, to 9 Middle Eastern governments that either donated to the Clinton Foundation or whose affiliated groups paid Bill Clinton personal speaking fees.
Okay, so the United States is in the middle of arms sales all the time, as we know, billions and billions all over the world. To our caller's point, would these things have just happened anyway?
That's a good question, and we looked at that question. And what we found is that in the overall arms sales, there was a 143% increase in overall arms sales to Clinton Foundation donors compared to an average overall worldwide increase in sales at the same time of just 80%. We also found that in terms of chemical weapons during the Arab Spring, that there was a 50% increase in chemical weapons sales to Clinton Foundation donors at a time when other Middle Eastern governments that were not Clinton Foundation donors, Arab governments, they actually saw a decrease in those chemical weapons exports.
You're a politically colored hardball reporter, David. Do you see real, you know, smoking gun problem here, or is this up in the realm of just optics, bad optics?
Well, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, the question is whether there was a conflict. Should the Secretary of State be overseeing arms deals from countries that are paying her husband or giving to her foundation? And I think that's the big question here. And there are certainly examples here where that raise even more specific questions. I mean, Algeria gave a $500,000 contribution to the Clinton Foundation in 2010, and suddenly $6 million of approvals of chemical weapons were allowed for that country, $5.8 million of that being tear gas. And the next year, the Algerian government used tear gas on Arab Spring protesters. Bill Clinton was paid by a speaking fee by a firm that's a part owner of the chemical weapons manufacturer, that their chemical weapons were approved for export to Egypt during the uprising there, and that chemical weapon was then used on protesters there.
David Sirota with the International Business Times. Thank you very much for joining us today, David.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Roslyn, are we just going to have a drumbeat of this? I mean, our caller is right, Roxanne. These are powerful people. There's a lot of money around. When they rub shoulders, there's going to be powerful interests that also rub shoulders. Did the Clinton Foundation's creation in itself create what would – was it inevitable that it would be a political issue if Hillary got in the race?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we found is that this is not a bug of the Clinton Foundation. This is a design feature. And so, yes, I do think it was going to be an inevitable question. There were going to be a lot of reporting like David's and ours and other people's, and there will be more going forward.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the building of the Clinton Foundation, its money, its power, and what it means now for Hillary Clinton and her presidential ambitions. Rosalind Helderman and Tom Hamburger are with us, two of the three reporters on a big story in the Washington Post this week that really just walks all the way through the early days when this was put together to help finance the Clinton Library in Arkansas and more there, how it grew as Bill Clinton saw this as a way to have more influence on the world stage, kind of get him away from TiVo and the House and back out into the world, and it did that in a very, very big way. Headline, the inside story of how the Clintons built a $2 billion global empire. Supporters say, why not? It's for good. Critics, maybe inevitably in a campaign season, are saying, wait a minute, what about conflicts of interest? And there is an unusual intersection of powers around the foundation. But is that wrong? These are powerful people. Here's Hillary Clinton. This was in June 2013. Talked about the work of the Clinton Foundation at the foundation's Global Initiative America, or CGI, meeting in Chicago.
That's really what CGI America is designed to do as well, to bring together the best ideas wherever they come from, to find the most innovative solutions, most committed partners, to take on our biggest challenges in an integrated, collaborative way.
Hillary Clinton in 2013. Just integrated, collaborative, what's the problem? Listeners all over the map on this, a lot of supporters, critics as well. Here's one says, this has the stench of quid pro quo all over it. Supporters say, give us the hard evidence. But critics too. Zosima says, find me any major politician whose PACs turned money away. It's true. There's money all over the place. Brian says Republicans pushed through Citizens United. Then they want disclosure from the Clintons. Why aren't they complaining about Karl Rove? Bobby, Republicans are owned by the Koch brothers whose agenda is transparent. Red, here's one, says, I don't remember such a furor over Darth Cheney's proximity to Halliburton in previous elections. Rosalind, Tom, what about the issue of equity in attention? Do the Clintons draw more, or is something about this setup different?
Well, the Clintons draw more attention, Tom, and always have. And part of it is the personality of Bill Clinton, who would draw, as we talked about earlier, the likes of Carlos Slim and Chevy Chase, the former heads of state of Mexico and Brazil, all at the same, and Mick Jagger, all in the same room at the same time. One quick thought is that I think part of what's going on here, as we've been discussing, is that this is an unusual charity. It's not like the Gates Foundation or even like the sort of dull and seeming kind of mechanistic grant-giving foundations that we know so well, Ford and Carnegie and so forth. This is a foundation that's an implementing foundation led by a guy who loves to be around movie stars, rock stars, as well as powerful CEOs from around the globe. So it's an unusual foundation.
But none of those things
are
a crime on their face.
So let me continue if I could, Tom.
Yes.
If this wouldn't be a problem at all, I think, if not for the fact that Hillary Clinton is part of the foundation, and she has recently been during one of the most one of the biggest eras of fundraising for the foundation. She's Secretary of State and could be the next president. That's what changes things. Candidates running for office in the U.S. are limited in how much money they can receive. Someone just mentioned the Koch brothers and PACs and so forth. There are laws that govern the amount of money that can be provided to a candidate. But in this case, and they also limit donations from foreign entities. But when you're dealing with a charitable organization, those limits don't exist. And some across the board and across the political spectrum, there are now charities that have become politically nonprofit groups that have become politically active and can accept donations without disclosing them. But none are on the scale of the Clinton Foundation, which not only offers such reputational benefits because it claims and apparently does some important good works, but also provides a platform for a future candidate. And finally, David Sirota mentioned this briefly, it is also provided outside of the foundation but related to it, a very important income stream for the Clintons personally, as many of the foundation donors pay Bill and sometimes Hillary Clinton speaking fees in addition to the donations they make to their charity.
Amy in Austin, Texas. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a fundraiser, and it is damned hard work. And when you think about the economy in the last 10 years, these people have worked miracles raising this money. And it's for a good cause, and they seem to be able to manage it pretty well. I have to take money from Democratic and Republican administrations. I get money from zoos, mining company, and some really crazy governments globally. But if they're willing to invest in our mission, my nonprofit's mission, I'm glad to get to the table with them. Some of the mining companies that we get funding from to protect endangered species have horrible reputations, and we get castigated in the press when we take money from them. But you know what? I could stand off to one side smug and jeering and ignorant and not have their money and not have access to their decision makers and never change their bad practices.
Amy, would you feel different ethically, I'm just asking here, if you had been or might one day be president of the United States? Would that change the...
No, not at all. The best executive directors of nonprofits usually aren't promoted from the program staff. They're promoted from the fundraisers. This is how business has to be done. You need that money to invest in good outcomes.
So go get it where you find it and put it to work. Amy, we've got it. One more, and we'll go to a Tracy Seffel of David in New York, Medusa, New York. David, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, people sort of forget when they left the White House, there was $6 million in debt because of the Whitewater situation and their, you know, association with those kinds of people and Vince Foster and whatnot. But here's a President Clinton who brought the DLC, the corporations, into the Democratic Party, helped pass NAFTA, WTO. People that are talking about their good work that they do, you know, there's real-life consequences to things that are going on. Drilling in countries in the Amazon, things that these corporations that they're getting this good money from to do goodwill for, there's real consequences what those corporations are doing in the world. And when you look at who the Clintons are and she's now running for president, the conflict of interest, her association with energy companies, with the XL pipeline that could go through farmers' lands, things like that, that it all sounds, you know, there are, what, Coke dealers in Colombia that built homes and cities for people. That's all.
But what about Amy in Austin, Texas, who says, look, if you want to get the money to put it to work, you've got to go get it where it is?
I can tell you I was an original member of Greenpeace when there were 17 of us,
yep.
And Greenpeace has never taken a corporate dime from anybody. And the fact of what the incremental steps of some of these organizations that do take money from bad, you know, blood money from corporations that are saying they're doing good. I'm not sure. I don't know what that woman does with her money and how hard she really hits when she wants to save mm-hmm. some environmental thing when taking it from an oil corporation. Because if you hit hard enough, they're not going to give money. So that's a joke anyway. But anyway, this woman's running for president. If you look at who the Clintons are, what their background is, who their association, what they're good and what they see on the outside, you know, is one thing. Who they do, you know, what they've done is, like I said, passing NAFTA, WTO, their association with, you know, corporations that are, you know, involved with the pipeline, with Vince Foster, Whitewater.
We've got it, David. We've got it. I appreciate your call. Let me go, if I may. Rosalind, Tom, stand by. Tracy Seffel joins us right now from Chicago. Democratic strategist, Hillary Clinton supporter, most recently a senior advisor to the Ready for Hillary Super PAC. Tracy Seffel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Maybe I shouldn't presume, but I kind of imagine you read Tom and Roslyn and David's piece in the Washington Post. Does their narrative, their telling of the birth and growth of the Clinton Foundation line up with your understanding? And should it give people pause?
Well, I thought the three of them did a really interesting piece. I think people do want to know about the genesis of such a unique, powerful, vast foundation. And I think it's very clear that this is an this is an altruistic operation. I appreciated their reporting. I found it to be, you know, very generally fair. And I think that it's also worth pointing out that there's the kind of reporting that the Washington Post and that these three talented reporters did. And then there's sort of another stream of reporting about the foundation that feels a lot less, shall we say, scientific, that, you know, you can make correlations between all kinds of things, between people and companies and countries and money and agencies and so forth. But that doesn't in any way imply a correlation. And what I
appreciated about causation, you mean? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. And what I appreciated about the Post is that they told the story of the genesis. And I think we all know, and your callers certainly recognize, this is political season. It's time to dig and make attacks and do all of these things. And my only hope as a supporter and a voter for Hillary is that I just don't want these attacks in any way to inhibit the work of the foundation. And I do think that piece is getting lost in a lot of this discussion, that the conversations we're having and the pieces we're reading, I just hope that there's not an inhibition that donors and potential donors feel, because hundreds of millions of people are being helped by this foundation. That, to me, seems like a good place to stop.
Tracy, you're a political strategist. So, of course, there's the work of the foundation, but there's also the Hillary Clinton campaign here. And I wonder, you know how these things play out. This can provide a lot of material for a long time. You say, well, it's just correlation. Well, you know, you're going to have people arguing causation. They'll argue it anyway. Headline in the Post today, Clinton rivals pounce as her ratings fall. Once sleepy Democratic presidential primary contest fast coming alive as Hillary Rodham Clinton's poll numbers fall and a diverse array of long-shot opponents step forward to challenge her. You're a strategist. How big a deal is this so far in terms of the direction of the campaign?
Well, certainly anyone involved in the campaign knew that the foundation would be a lightning rod in many ways. It's there. The foundation has themselves been committed to transparency. Much of this reporting wouldn't be possible if the foundation wasn't posting things on its website for the whole world to see. But what I think is also important, if people want to talk about polling and approval numbers, is to see just how favorably Americans who are paying attention at this point feel about what Hillary's proposing, what her economic policy proposals are, what she's saying she would do as president. And I think that's what people want to know about. That's what people care about. That's what people are responding to. Now, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be this kind of reporting. I certainly welcome it. I welcome good investigative reporting in all realms, for all industries. I do think it's important to remember that as this is happening, the American public is listening to what Hillary is just beginning to propose as a candidate, and they like what they hear.
Gil in Waltham, Massachusetts. Gil, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have an observation and a question. My observation or experience is my wife has worked with the Clinton Foundation from the health initiative, everything from Ethiopia to Swaziland, Lesotho. And I've seen the result of that saves thousands and thousands of lives of protecting newborns from transmission of the AIDS virus. So I've seen the result of that. The question that I have other past presidents, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, et cetera, received the same level of scrutiny that the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons are? And I'll take my comments off air.
Thank you for calling, Gil. Tom, Rosin, one of you want to pick that up? Past presidents?
I take a first look at that, which is that probably no other presidential foundations have faced the same level of scrutiny because, as we were just discussing, Tom, none have the same characteristics of the Clintons.
Their work, or what do you mean exactly when you?
Well, I was just going to list that. One is the fundraising, raising $2 billion since the foundation was formed. That's a much larger number than we associate with other presidential foundations. Mm-hmm. Second, none of those foundations have led by a former president, has a spouse who is a candidate for president or who served as Secretary of State. which changes, at least in our view, the level of scrutiny that we journalists are feel required to do, and that we think the public probably would demand.
And just to sort of explain why, in case it's not obvious, it's not just that we as journalists are interested in presidential candidates. It's that for former presidents, they and their families were retired and out of politics. The money, there was little they could do to help potential donors other than give them sort of the goodwill of appearing with a famous and perhaps respected person. In this case, there's a great deal that Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and as president could do to help a donor if she wanted to. A donor could certainly be forgiven for believing that to be the case.
But Tracy says correlation, you can say it all day long without causation. You know, it's just good work.
And I think that's a fair point. But she also said that she appreciates our continued efforts to investigate and to dig and to look into these things. And you know, there was just a poll this week that found that a large percentage of Americans considered this to be a legitimate area of inquiry during a campaign.
You have to see that. Tracy Seffel, on balance, again, you're a strategist. Do you see the Clinton Foundation as an asset to Hillary Clinton's presidential ambitions, or a burden, maybe even the bill problem in another guise?
Well, I think that another unique quality about Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton is that they are so accustomed to this level of scrutiny. It's of no surprise. It's not new. It's something they've been experiencing in their decades of public service. So from the standpoint of should they run from this, or should Hillary run from this, absolutely not. The kind of work that's being done, the kind of outcomes that the foundation is seeing from its work is heartening, motivating, inspiring. And on a sort of personality level, I think everyone recognizes the energy that President Clinton brings to his work, that he is in no way slowing down, and he's got a lot of work to do. He's got a lot of lives to save and lives to improve, and there's no way he's going to slow down.
Tracy Seffel, we've got it now, and we appreciate your being with us. Of course, she can't run from it. It's too big to run from, so it will be dealt with one way or another. Tracy Seffel, a Hillary Clinton supporter and Democratic strategist, joining us from Chicago. Thank you so much, Tracy.
Thank you, Tom.
And Tom Hamburger and Rosalind Helderman with The Washington Post. Link to their piece at our website, onpointradio.org. Tom, Rosalind, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
This is On Point.